Alan Kring Productions, in association with Emergent Life Studio, presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, Academic Lectures in Business and Economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240 for Autumn Semester 2021.
To introduce myself, I am Professor Alan Kring. You can call me Professor Kring or Professor C, or I'll call you Mr. or Ms. as appropriate, and what you want. This is FIL 240, Section 2 for Autumn Semester of 2021. Finally back together, live, real time. I'm going to go through the syllabus with you, make a few quick introductory comments, and then I'm going to have the Cengage representative speak to you about getting you started with your e-text and other resources in Cengage. And then once he's finished, I'll get back in hot and heavy into your first day's lecture. First things first. Again, I'm Professor C. I'm loud and I'm aggressive. I will come right at you and ask you questions. I expect you to be responsive to me at all times. Always wear your mask in here. I don't want to die on the hill of COVID-19. So keep your masks on, unfortunately, at least for now. I will ask you questions. I will expect you to be responsive to me. I will give you a lot of material in this course, and I will come right up to you and talk to you in your faces as I go along. I've been doing this for 40 years. Let me tell you a little bit about my history. I'm a high school dropout. I started college, flunked out of that, so I joined the Army. I was a cannon fire direction specialist, the mathematician of the guns. I have Asperger's syndrome, so I teach across the curriculum, everything from linguistics to mathematics, finance, economics, English grammar, composition, and literature. When I got out of the Army, I was a gospel evangelist for a while. I went to Ohio State. I taught math there for about 8 years, and then went out into the wind. I was a consultant. I got into a lot of really unfortunate, dark dealings, and I'm lucky to be alive from that. I ran a brokerage house, a penny stock house for a while. For the last 15 years, I've been a professional artist and photographer when I'm not a professor of finance. You can find my work under Emergent Light Studio. I am on YouTube, Alan Kring. Or you can certainly go and find my work on TikTok. Make sure you like me on TikTok, right? Or not. There's crazies on there. I've already got stalkers. God, you're weird-ass people. Okay. Now, I'm harsh and aggressive, and I'm loud. When I teach you, there's going to be two parts of this course. There's going to be the textbook, and that's where the chapter homeworks come in. But I'm also going to teach you in class, and that's not always going to be what's in the textbook. That's the subject of the in-class quizzes, that is the subject of the midterm and the final exam. Now, sometimes the book and I will disagree. Sir, if the book and I disagree, who's right?
You.
Oh, you are an intellectual colossus. Yes, I am impressed already. Now, I'm going to teach you everything that I can in the short amount of time that we have together as a happy family under the conditions that at least it's a lot better than it was when we were doing Zoom. But I will go through a lot of new terminology in this class, well over 100 terms and words. Sometimes they'll be the same word that's commonly used, but it will have a much more specific, precise meaning to us in our discipline. You are going to be changed. You're no longer going to be the common people with your common sense and your Facebook and your Wikipedia to fall back on. You're going to fall forward into the future because you, God forbid, are the future. And I can't protect you, but I can prepare you for it. And I'll do my damnedest to do that for you. Lord. Subtext is, of course, that I've got to build words and language and thinking. The truth of the matter is that accounting is where you learn the formulas and learn the numbers. Quite honestly, I don't give a rat's ass about how well you can do a formula, because you'll do the formulas in this class mostly on a calculator. I do the hard part where you have to tell me what it means. These numbers have no depth whatsoever unless you can explain to me how this tells me how to make my next investment as an investor, how a corporation is supposed to proceed forward with projects under review, how we are supposed to analyze the strength of an industry. That takes us interpreting numbers, telling us what those numbers actually stand for. I can have a company say, well, we made this massive profit in the second quarter. Stock price goes down. Why does that happen? It happens because the market expected that company to give more, to make more money. So the numbers themselves don't tell us much of anything unless we have the depth and the context. You see, in the short run, fancy people can do all kinds of things and get impressive reviews by the news media, but that doesn't help us at all because we're the long haulers. We're the ones who have to create a future that is enduring. So now let me go through the syllabus with you, and I should apologize for some of my harshness here, but I'm not going to apologize. Academic integrity. That means don't cheat in my class. I will eat your ass for that. I have seen too many successful businessmen who are nothing but sociopathic sons of bitches. Everyone from Bill Gates and Steve Jobs to George Soros, people like that, the great heroes of business, not on my watch. I had to deal with those people in the world I was in, and let me tell you, they are disgusting human beings, and I'm not going to let you out of my class if you think you can cheat your way like they did. Professional standards. I had a couple of people send me email messages. Is there a dress code in your class? Well, I do expect clothing, okay? But aside from that, for God's sake, you're still in college. Enjoy your last few years of happiness before you become part of the machine. And so, yeah, but professional standards mean, how do you address me? You don't send me an email, hey, dude, for God's sake, don't. Or 20 question marks after a question and all that kind of nonsense. Your professionalism, your demeanor, how you carry yourselves, because that's what is going to make you or break you when you get out there is, can I do what I do in a way that impresses the people around me? Now, I do it because I'm a crazy son of a bitch, but don't try that. I've somehow managed to survive all these years doing that, but don't. Okay, let me go through this real quick. The online chapter homework, I drop your lowest two, just go in, you read the textbook, you do the problems. My Cengage representative is here to tell you all about that. And I drop your two lowest. Now, one important thing, don't ever ask me for an extension, or I won't give it, or I won't give a makeup. Don't do that. I drop your two lowest homeworks, your two lowest in class. If you're sick, you get a message to the Office of the Dean of Students. They can tell me to back off. And they're mean, so I will. But other than that, you're riding this. You don't get two lowest quiz scores and then some extras if you missed a class. It's two. If you're going to miss a midterm, you better have something from the Dean of Students, or you're just going to have the final count for both. Okay. Now, when I come up to you and ask you questions, I expect you to be responsive. So in other words, if you're planning to come in here and you're coming down from Molly, that's not a good idea. Or if you're wasted, baked, or whatever, probably not a good idea because I'm going to smell you a mile away. I ask questions and I want you to be responsive because out there in the business world, the way you're going to stand out is if you are asked a question, you have a good answer. At first, you're not going to give me good answers, and that I expect. I'm easy on you when you give me a wrong answer at first. I just say something like, you stupid idiot. No, this is a process. I keep saying the same things over and over. And the first time you answer me back, you're probably going to get it wrong, or you're not going to see what I'm looking for. That's normal. That's for the entirety of human history works like that. So, but I will keep after you and expect you to answer me as time goes on, better and better. Academic integrity, in other words, again, don't cheat on me. The learning resources, the textbook, yeah. Now, ReggieNet. ReggieNet is an abomination hated by God. I guarantee you, VeggieNet drives me crazy. It makes people do tests and then the answers go away sometimes. I've gone. This is my third mask so far today. I'm drooling into these so much, it's ridiculous. Okay, now, but your grade book will be always up to date in Cengage, and then I'll move them over to the ReggieNet grade book as every week or two. But go there for your for the authority. Now, I will probably give you your quizzes in ReggieNet. And again, also, as far as your computers go and cell phones, keep those at bay. Stow them away. There will be times when I say, bring out your computers, we're going to do this, or you're going to take a quiz. Other than that, don't use your computer in my classroom. I guarantee you, I have so many business executives. With one guy, he's a CEO, he said, had their computers while I was giving them a speech. Did you teach them that? No, I didn't teach them that. But okay. Now, calculator, TI-83-84. You can buy a physical one, but I've got a virtual one. It comes up on, like a normal calculator, the real TI, it comes up on your computer. Now, here's the history of that. This virtual TI has been around for like decades. It was there in the 1980s of all things, even before there was an internet. But it's a zip file and you just unzip it and there's this calculator. You can transfer the icon for the VTI 83 icon to your desktop. Well, somewhere, maybe about 5 years ago, was that you could download this a lot of different places, but then the only place you could download it was from Google, some Google site. And then, a couple of years ago, you can't download it from there anymore. And so, it's gone. Now, I know for a fact Google does not own that calculator. So, I had all these archives of the zip file I downloaded over the years. So, it's on in your resources tab, the zip file. I may have hidden it. I'll open it back up. And you can download that and fire it up. And it is the calculator. In fact, it's so realistic that it turns off to save power. Now, what the hell is that all about? It actually turns off, but it's got all of the finance apps. And believe me, those finance apps can do things like a boss. And the good part about that is that, you're not doing the formulas like you would do in accounting. You're not using those tables like you do in accounting. For heaven's sakes, you're not using those. The emphasis here is on interpretation of knowledge, of what the numbers mean. I can get a computer to do the calculation. I can get a computer to do it better than I can, especially considering I suck at math, even though I taught it for so many years. Boy, I messed up a lot of students. But you get used to this thing that I've got an answer, that's all that matters. No, not in our business, because we need actionable results. You have to tell me. A good example, you're going to learn ratio analysis. Well, yeah, I could have you calculate and memorize all the ratios and get the numbers and then say, here's my numbers. I get an A, right? No, because that doesn't tell me. Now, what does this return on assets mean? Is that, it's pretty high. The higher the better, right? Not necessarily. I can show you industries where ROAs of the companies were going up, 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 year over year over year for decades until people started getting killed by the hundreds. That was the refinery industry. The return on assets was going up from the 80s and 90s and early 2000s. Why? Because return on assets is net income divided by total assets. They were letting their total assets depreciate to hell, and they weren't replacing equipment, those giant towers, the cracking towers, and all of that. And sooner or later, boom, they started blowing up, killing people, the workers, even wiping out people in the communities down there in the Texas and off the coast. Yeah, you want to say it's great the higher this number gets? think about that a little more. That's the interpretation that I expect out of you. You can see, well, the profit of this company went up. That's a good thing. Well, not if the company became a lot riskier. Well, this fund manager, he made a 25% return on his investments. He's the best there is. No, he sucks because he took so much risk to get that 25% that he was showing extreme irresponsibility to those who were relying on him to safely invest their money. Don't impress me with what you're doing in the stock market until I see how your risk profile looks with it. Okay, so anyway, I kind of got off, deviated there. Excuse me. Wait. Hope that cough isn't Rona coming to get me. By the way, if you want to come to my office, and you don't believe in COVID, my brother is in my office. He was a school teacher for 25 years. He was killed by COVID-19. So his ashes are in my office. You can come in and say hi to Bill sometime if you want. The night janitors don't want to clean my office anymore. I guess it's because I put that voice box in there that spooked them. But anyway, where the heck was I? Okay. Now, you're going to get used to this. But after Chris Olson gives you his routine, listen carefully because they got some deals and you got to make a choice of what you want to do and how you want to do this. And your first assignment out of the textbook isn't due until the 29th. I try to give you about 2 weeks from when lectures begin until when the homework is due. So you've got breathing room to do it. For God's sake, don't put it off until the last night because it can ruin your day doing it that way. But I will get back into the lecture and you will get the full force of how I teach. So enjoy, Chris, while you can. Take it away.
How's everybody doing this afternoon? Great to see your eyes, rather see faces, but it is what it is. How many of you have seen me at least once today? Twice?
Getting started again here. Keep your eyes open and your ears open for what we do in this class because I pour information at you at a very aggressive rate. And in this first lecture, you'll probably have about 5 to 7 terms that are new or at least new variations on terms that you've heard before. Couple of preliminary pieces of information here on finance. Finance is a subdiscipline of economics. It is one of those subdisciplines that has never been appreciated as much as it should be. Accounting goes back many, many centuries, back to even the earliest civilizations. We do see accounting. Most of those clay tablets we get, they're not mysterious truths about the universe or something like that. They are actually just receipts, inventories, and stuff like that. Accounting has an ancient history, and it was one of the motive forces that propelled the age of exploration at the end of the Middle Ages and through the Renaissance. However, it's not what we do. You see, because accounting deals with history. And history, wait a minute, I've been talking so much today. And history has very limited meaning for us in finance. History is over for us. And so when accountants produce information products for various constituencies, and we use accounting information, but we have to fix it, we have to repair it, we have to alter it and twist it so that it tells us what matters to us. Because accounting has to deal with historical costs, pulling things up, and that doesn't mean a whole lot to us at all. Historical costs are kind of irrelevant. So to give you, and also, there's a much more fundamental flaw in the accounting cost thinking that we would ruin us if we didn't fix it. You, sir, decided that you would come to the dark side and become a finance major. And so we prepared you for interviews, and we got you ready, and you got a job at State Barn. State Barn, you're going to make $60,000 a year there. So there you are at the graduation, and all the professors are sitting there in black robes scowling at you. You are so unworthy of this degree. But underneath, you know, we're, oh, God, there's my kid going. And so there you took off, driving away, and I knew your future was secure. 2 years later, you come back into my office, and there, you're State Farm. Yeah, you're probably really doing well there. I'm so proud of you. And you say, no, Professor C. I left that graduation ceremony, and I realized I had to live my dream. You what? Yes, my dream was to own a donut shop. What? Yes. I am, and I just got back my first full year's accounting information, and my income statement says I made $20,000. What do you think of me, Professor C? You know what I'm going to say to you? You dumbass. You didn't make $20,000. You lost $40,000. Do you understand why that is? He didn't make $20,000. He lost $40,000. Because the opportunity cost of that $20,000 was the $60,000 he gave up. That's what matters to us in finance. What is the best foregone alternative? Opportunity cost is the cost of the best foregone alternative. Opportunity cost is the cost of the best foregone alternative. Opportunity cost is the cost of the best foregone alternative. Now, I said that three times. You'll find that when I do that, it's most definitely going to show up on a quiz and or an exam. You see that cost? We don't even see that $40,000 loss. We don't see the $60,000. It didn't happen. But that is what is going to drive his decision making. Ultimately, opportunity cost motivates so many parts of our business lives and our even our social lives. When you are young, you won't make much money, so the opportunity cost of sitting around playing World of Warcraft or Call of Duty is extraordinarily low. But when you're making $100 an hour, screw that, I'm not playing a game tonight. I make $100,000, I make $100 an hour. You think about it. There's a store not far from here, there's a couple of them, Schnucks. The prices are higher there than they are at Walmart. You see, let me tell you about, though, why would I ever pay those higher prices at Schnucks when I can go to Walmart? Well, let me tell you about Walmart. First, you have to park in another county, and then you have to walk through the parking lot and nearly get run over by some ginormous truck driven by some prairie cracker hillbilly playing gangsta music, really. And then you go in the door and you walk, hi, welcome to Walmart. You look around, oh, God, they're hiring short people. And then you walk down the hall, and you got way behind some big person who's saying, honey, what do you want for dinner? Get out of the way, cow. And you're trying to go around. You go to the line. There's a 30-minute line there. The kids in front of you are picking their nose, staring at you. The old lady up front using a debit card for the first time. I can't get this thing. Whoa, you hurry up, lady. You're going to die soon. Go home and eat. See, you're going to pay if you can. You'll pay more just so you don't have that indignity of having a kid picking his nose right in front of you for 30 minutes. You understand? Opportunity cost drives. When we have kids commit more crimes than older adults, that's because they don't have the opportunity cost of their time is lower. They can afford to be put in jail at a higher rate. You keep people in poverty? Well, guess what? Their time incarcerated is not worth as much as the time of a rich person. So the rich person is going to figure out ways to break the law without getting caught. We can explain so much with opportunity cost, but we can't look at that in accounting. We have to think about that in our heads in finance. What did you give up? That's a huge part of it. Let me give you another cost that is deeply important to us in finance that it does not exist in accounting. You, madam, you decide that you're going to live your dream. You're going to own a little gas station with one of those little kiosks. You know, you go in, you can buy candy and cigarettes, and then there's a little back room. You've got a little black and white TV you can watch. Okay? You know one of those places. You even changed your name to Earl so you can wear a shirt that has an oval that says Earl. Okay? It's living the dream. So there you are. You see, the Cocaline driver, there's a whole line of gas stations along this road. There's plenty of business for all of them, so the prices are pretty much similar. And the Cocaline driver stops at your place first and offloads 10,000 gallons, $3 a gallon. You mark it up 25 cents like everyone else does down the line, $3.25, okay? So here comes the Cocaline driver in, delivers your gas, you pay him. And then you go back in, he's leaving, and you go back in and sit down and watching your television, and it's not the show that you were watching. On the screen are pictures of explosions and ships sinking, and my God, was that a mushroom cloud? And the ticker across the bottom is saying, Israel and Iran exchanged nuclear weapons. OMG. The Strait of Hormuz has been mined. A sunburned missile has already taken out one aircraft carrier of the United States. And a super tanker has been brought down by a silkworm. And there's oil spilling out all over in the Persian Gulf. Well, by the time that Cocaline driver gets to the next station, the gas is $10 a gallon he's going to charge. So all the way down the line, 10 and 25 cents, 10, 25, 10, 25, all that. And there you are at 325. What are you going to do? No, because you can't afford the next load of gas. You're out of business because all those people are going to drive. They're going to buy up your gas. You don't have the money to buy the next load. You're done. Game over. And you know what those people are going to do? Oh, they're my loyal customers. I can't hurt them. They don't give a rat's ass about you. They won't even remember that your name was Earl after you're out of business. That is replacement cost. That's what matters. Not historical cost. You, sir, bought a car for $2,000. Now it's classic and it's worth in book value $20,000. You going to charge $2,000 for it? Well, I can't charge more because I'd just be screwing people over. Oh, hell. Get real. You're that thing, smash capitalism, bring it, cupcake. Let me give you another one. You are a bread maker. You want to be a bread maker, and you could be a bread maker. Now, you, sir, are the only bread maker in town at the current time. You can charge whatever you want because people have to have bread. So you can, what motivation do you have not to waste, put flour into the pot? Ugh, lots of it falls on the floor. You hire your loser brother here who sits in the basement playing World of Warcraft. Really, World of Warcraft? And Cheetos, yeah. You don't care because you can charge whatever the market will bear. You can screw your customers over. Who cares? But then you, sir, look at him and you say, you know what? I can do the same damn thing he's doing, but I just won't spill flour and I won't hire unproductive losers. My brother can go to hell. Okay? And you can charge a lower price because you're using fewer resources. You're using your resources more efficiently. That's called static efficiency. Static efficiency is using your existing resources more efficiently. That was what we did with car engines, making them so they use less and less gas over the years, going from carburetors to fuel injectors and all of that. Static efficiency. But now you, madam, you're looking at him and you're saying, you know what? The whole thing, business, is not working right. I could do this whole thing with fewer workers and more machines and maybe computerize my operations and do precision analysis on the actual ingredients that people like, and I can save money and I can pass that along to my customers. You're going to take his business, just like he took your business. And none of you are going to do that because you love your customers. We say that all the time. We're in business because we love people. We love Mother Earth. We love everything. Music plays in the background, children floating in fields, getting COVID-19. No, you didn't do it for that. You did it because of greed. You wanted to take his business and drive him under. And he wanted to take your business and drive you under so that your kids would have to go to University of Illinois instead of Illinois State University. I didn't say that. Do you understand what we're saying here? Greed is not bad. Greed is good. Greed motivates us. Greed drives us to efficiency. Greed makes us all better. You know what? We have easily only about 15 to 20% of the starvation on Earth now that we did at the beginning of the 20th century. That's because we have capitalism driving the markets, pulling in the resources, using them efficiently, and sometimes that's painful and bloody. If I have to fire your ass to do it, I will. Because in the end, I'm going to use as few resources as I can. And I might even lie to you to get you to buy my product, but that's the reality of it. You understand, there's the problem, though. You're finally in control of the market with the most efficient technology, but here's the problem. A sign on top of your store says, "My bread tastes like ass." No one wants to buy bread that tastes like butt. Yeah. Okay? Trying to get the kid, "No, Mommy, I don't want that bread. That bread tastes like butt." "Oh, shut up. There's kids in other countries who'd love to have a butt sandwich like that." No, do you understand that we cannot destroy our customer base? That's where ethics begins to come in, where you can't just do whatever you want unless you're real good at being a sociopathic liar, like people like, I won't mention their names right now, but it does happen. But you understand that there are limits on the greed if the market is working properly. The problem is when the market doesn't work properly. But in and of itself, greed is not an evil. Greed is what drives us. Everything that I assume in this class is going to be assumed on the premise of greed. Stock prices go up and down not because of some natural thing or some air gods or something like that. It's all because everyone in this market is driven by greed. You might make money. I might even let you make money for a while because I will set you up and then I'll take that lunch money of yours because you don't deserve it. I deserve it more because I can buy a steak and you don't even know what a good steak tastes like. You understand what we're talking about here is that these markets are not built on non-scientific principles. It's all mathematics, all principles. Go. Replacement cost is the cost. Replacement cost is the cost of what that item would cost. You would pay for that item at the current time. Replacement cost is the cost of what you would pay for an item at the current time, not historical cost at all. And this is part of it too. Is you understand that when we analyze this, I bought a car from you 10 years ago for $2,000. Now I want to buy a car from you now. You're going to charge me the same amount? No, you're going to charge me whatever it is that I will bear and what that car is costing right now. Not what it cost at the beginning, 10 years ago. You see, here's the underlying problem, is that historical costs or historical stock prices, historical anything in this kind of world we're in, really don't matter. It's all over. That, you, sir, you bought $100 worth of stock a year ago, and now it's worth $10. You come to me, you say, "What do I do?" And I say, "Well, what do you want to accomplish?" You say, "Well, I'd like to make my $100 back." I'm going to ask you, "Sir, do you know where that $100 is now?" You know where it is? It's with Jesus. It's gone. It's sitting at the right hand of the Lord. He knows how to save. You don't. You've got $10, and whether you buy more of it, you hold your position, or you sell it, that's entirely based upon what's going to happen. Whatever happened in the past,
that $100 is gone. And you ain't going to see it again because you ain't going that direction. Oh, I don't know. Maybe you are. Yeah, no, you're not. You understand that we cannot care about history. The future is what matters in our world. I got to get some more coffee. The future is what matters in our world. That's better. What the hell is in that? Oh, hi, Jack. How sweet it is. Okay. Shut up. Okay. Here we go. This is an important, absolutely crucial, is that you understand that, yes, we look at these stock charts. Well, the price has been going up and down, and we see a tendency of the stock price to be rising, so that means it will continue. No, it doesn't mean anything like that at all. We do that. We say it all the time. We play with charts. I'll even show you some cool charts and how you do some technical analysis of stocks. But you know what? It doesn't mean anything at all because history is over. You know what is even worse? Right now, there is one definitely, and probably a couple of other houses that can see the stock price in the future. Right now, it's about 100 milliseconds. Yes, they can see the future. Do you really think you have anything from the past that can beat millions of completely sociopathic traders with massive amounts of information pouring at them in every direction, experienced as they are, driven by hunger and greed that you couldn't even imagine because you aren't cluster B psychopaths, and artificial intelligence coming online in 10 years. Right now we've got fast machine learning that can learn faster than we can. Do you really think you're going to beat that by looking at a stupid-ass chart from another time? You aren't. We talk about it. We've done this all through human history. We imagine that the stories have meaning. The Vikings talked about the Norse gods, Odin, Thor, and all that, but they still went and they slaughtered people to gain their territory. The same is true of the Mongols and the Romans and the Greeks and the Aztecs. They can talk about their gods all they want, but that's just an excuse. We can talk about these feelings we have and all of this, but that's just an excuse. It all comes down to science, and it comes down to formulas and physics and the future. I teach a course here, one of the most difficult courses you'd ever take in finance. It's called derivatives. Futures, options, swaps, forward contracts, all that kind of exotic stuff. It's all the same physics equations that drive everything from a little particle moving through a fluid to the greatest giant strings of galaxies in the universe. The same equations. Do you really think your magic has anything to do with that? This is what separates you from the common people. I am trying to bring you up to the point where you know that you are the leaders. And you can let them have their bread and circuses, their beliefs, their political opinions this way and that way. You stay in the middle. And that's where you will have your greatest success. You start losing it. It's just like they taught us in combat. Our job is to make sure that we get the enemy confused, scared, and we make them run and scatter. Then we can take care of the problem and go home for some decent chow. You stay frosty and you keep objective in your analysis. Yes, we've got a guy who's running a company. It's a complete scam. He's a pothead, and he hams it up on stage. He's the biggest baked ham you ever saw. The question is not whether or not he's an idiot and an asshole. The question is, does the business model work, and is it an investment that we should take on? That's all that matters. Because in the end, the peculiarities of the individuals and the individual companies actually doesn't mean much to us. Understand that I am not going to teach you how to predict a stock price tomorrow. I will not do that. I will teach you how to have disciplined, mature approach to long-term investment for yourself, for your family, for your company, for the industry you're in. not this day-to-day thing. Yeah, we'll play with those kinds of games, you know, it's intrinsic value and the market value are different, so there's a buy or a sell play here. But in the end, that's just our fun stuff on the side. Ultimately, I'm trying to get you to see the long picture, because that's what leaders do. And if I'm going to do anything in this class, I don't care whether you're born a leader or you can be made a leader, you're going to see what it means to be one in my class. Here in this class, every day I'm going to pull up stock market screens and I'm going to show you the numbers. Well, let's look at the numbers. That's how I'm going to start almost every class. And at first, it's going to be an ocean of what the hell is that and what's this? But as time goes on, you get better and better at seeing the details. And you use the words more and more properly. At first, you won't use them right. Of course you won't. Don't try to sweat it. You know, you use a word wrong, I'll say, you dumbass. No, I won't. I understand that this is a process. I've taught K through 12. I've taught undergrad, grad. Hell, I teach people from other countries. I've got a delegation coming from West Africa that I'm going to be teaching a crash course like this to. And I teach in Central America in the summers. Everyone's the same. I mean, if you can know something the first time I show it to you, you'll kind of scare me, you'll worry me. So when I say these things, and I say these terms, and I'll ask you to tell me something, well, what's the risk level of this company? You're going, what the hell do I see that? Well, I told you yesterday. Don't you remember? No, I won't do it like that. We just build it up until you've got it as good as I have it. Don't try to take my job, though. Well, go ahead. Try, please. I could use retirement. Well, you quit it. For heaven's sake. Now, for lack of anything, I would not recommend this for any professional stuff, but for this, yahoo.com. A little bit before I go into this, I have two clubs that I founded, and they're dead right now because, of course, Rona kept everyone from being around. I have a club, Business Association of Economics and Finance, BAEF, and the mission of that is twofold. One side is financial literacy outreach, if you're interested in getting involved in that. And the other side is there'll be a trading club, paper trading only. Don't try to use real money in there. I also have another club. Believe it or not, I've run it for a number of years. It's a ghost hunting club. So, yes, we really do hunt ghosts, and if you're interested in that, you have to sign a waiver. If you get demonically possessed, you're not going to hold me responsible, but I'll come and get you when I'm free. I'll have to check my meeting schedule. But yeah, if you're interested in either of my clubs, just let me know. Okay, but this one is focused on if you're interested in business stuff, economics and finance, this one's for you. Now, see these things right here, greens and reds? Okay, you might be thinking to yourself, green is good, red is bad. Well, kind of, because green means that something went up. Red means something went down. But just because something went down isn't bad, because I can make money either way. I can make money when stock prices or something goes up, but I can make it just as much money if a price collapses. You might be betting on a stock price going up. Well, if I can make it so that it goes down, I'll take your lunch money and your dinner money and probably the money you were going to use for cat food. And then your cats are going to have to eat you, okay? You understand that red and green mean things relatively, and in our world, we have a more nuanced understanding. See this? The S&P 500 is not a stock exchange. It's just a pile of stocks all put into a portfolio. The 500 biggest companies, huge companies, you know, the kinds that are monopolistic competitors, the kinds that you will probably work for if you want to make a lot of money, but a good salary. But the S&P 500 is sort of a measure of how those 500 companies, taken together, their stocks, did for the day. The Dow is 30 of the largest companies of the earth, oligopolies. I mean, it used to be called the Dow Industrials, Dow Industrial Theory, but unfortunately, I mean, back when I was learning this many, many, many years ago, if I'd said that the Disney, the Mickey Mouse would be in the Dow 30, I would have been laughed out of the classroom, but things have changed so much. But those companies are very large. Now, the NASDAQ, and that's just a portfolio of 30 companies. It's an index. Now, that thing, the NASDAQ, that's actually an exchange. It's an old exchange. It's electronic. There isn't any floor where people are yelling and throwing papers and all that stuff you see on the advertisements or something like that. But it's been around. I mean, I ran a penny stock house in the electronic bulletin board service of the NASD, OTC. That was it. You bought and sold. The market makers, some market maker would say, well, I've got this little piss-ass company. Someone wants to sell 600 shares. And you have another market maker seeing this on the computer would say, okay, I can match. I got someone to buy 400. And another one would say, well, I got someone to buy 200. And the electronic system matched them together. This was before there was even what you know as an internet. This existed. And it's still around. It's still thriving. And the companies on this, there are just oceans, vast numbers of companies on this exchange. Most of them are small, what we call small cap, micro cap, something like that. There are some huge companies in there that just never went up to the New York Stock Exchange or to the American Stock Exchange. They just stayed on the NASDAQ. And so it is dominated by small cap companies, oftentimes with lower prices. And you think, well, there's the blue light special. I can buy those stocks at low prices. Well, that's because they are extremely risky stocks. You're getting a bargain because you're going to probably take an ass bath on those. And that's a technical term, too. And the Russell, there are so many of these different indexes, Russells, Wiltshires. I mean, it's kind of dizzying. But see here that the market closed with the Dow up the most. Now, understand here, these are not impressive numbers. But something more important is the actual absolute numbers are meaningless to us. Percentages are what matters. There is nothing about, the Dow went up 400 points today. Well, that's, what percentage was that? You, sir, could make a dollar on a $10 investment. That's not bad. You made a dollar on a $1,000 investment? Meh. You see, it's a percentage that matters. Absolute numbers are irrelevant to us, really, in most situations. And so when I look at these, a quarter of a percent, a third of a percent, that's just not too impressive at all. I wouldn't really, the Dow went up 110 points today. That's less than a third of a percent. Whoop-dee-doo, with a big flip on top of it. But notice something interesting. There is a pattern I can see, and you'll see this oftentimes. Information is what drives markets up and down. It is a clash of the good news and the bad news. And once it's in there, it's over, and the stock market moves on. It's not going to remember what happened today, tomorrow. That's not how it works. Why would I care about yesterday? Because today, yesterday's news is already in the stock price. So if you think you're going to go back and look at stock prices over the last 20 years, well, I can figure out, I see a pattern. There's an Elliott wave, or there's a candlestick, or there's some stochastics, or a Darvish box. It's irrelevant. All that matters is what happens next. You, madam, have gone into a house, your home, every night after work for the last 30 years. It's always been quiet, you know, soft, gentle. Kitties come up, trot, trot. Hi, mommy. Well, you open the door one night, and this demonic voice, I just ate your cat, and I'm going to send you to hell. Which matters, all those 30 years or what that demon just said to you as it's munching on Kitty? Yeah, see. history is gone. History does not repeat. History fulfills. You remember that. Okay, so I'm looking at this and I'm saying, well, that's not too impressive at all. But what there is seems to indicate that whatever motivated the market today, it was differentially favoring that news was better the larger the company. You see that? The Dow did the best. So in other words, there was news and it was good, but the bigger the company, the better the news was. And for the small caps, that news sucked. That was not good news at all. It was, as a matter of fact, that was kind of... And notice even the Russell, which is a pile of small, mid caps, that didn't do well either. So whatever news was propelling the market, it was better for the bigger the company. Now, another thing, you watch it when they explain, when these talking heads, well, it's because of this or because of that. You know what? I'm an expert in this, and there are days when I don't know WTF drove the market. What are there? Yeah, Afghanistan just got taken over by a bunch of cray, 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 crazy mofos. Well, apparently that didn't depress the big companies. More crazies to sell our shit to. Do you understand that it's very difficult sometimes? Sometimes you can tell right away. But if you are, well, I saw that this party's political party won this election, well, that's going to make the stock prices go, oh, you're asking for trouble. Don't even go there. That's not how markets work. You know what? We don't give a rat's ass about who's in charge as long as he or she isn't going to destroy the freaking economy. We do watch the Federal Reserve. We watch how these spending bills go through Congress and all of that. But if you're biasing your judgment based upon some ideological framework, you let me know, because I've got a specific account where I'll put all your lunch money that I take from you. Now, as you go in this course, you'll get used to the way I talk, and you'll actually find me downright humorous sometimes. But I'm dead serious when I tell you that everything I do in here is to make you strong. Because the stronger you are, the stronger the future is, and you'll make money someday, and then you can buy my damn art. Remember, like me on the social media. That's all I have for you today. I thank you.